Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Market and Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe's been doing all of that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thanks as always to the Des Moines Iver Session for providing our bumper music. I'm going to talk about week three of my Save America March. I want to start by actually the end of week two, because it was a great experience. I arrived in Creston. It had been a decent day's walk, but I was tired, and I needed something to drink. I always crave orange juice. So I stopped at a store, bought an OJ, went outside, and there was a gal sitting at the only table in the shade. I says, "Hey, can I join you? I really got to sit down. Want a slice of shade here?" And she said, "Sure." And as I sat there, I'm watching. She's got a pile of blocks in front of her, and she's building them into a tower. I guess it's called Jenga. And there are, three little blocks in each layer? And it's about a foot tall or so. And so I asked, what's that? She says, it's Jenga. It's a game. I play with my kids. She's got three kids. And she pulls out a block and says, "Okay, your turn." Which I thought was a very nonchalant way of inviting me to join. And that was pretty cool. So I did, I'll take a shot at this. So I pulled a block out, and we went back and forth pulling blocks out, and I managed to pull one out, and I thought this is dicey, but it worked. And then she was in a bind, and sure enough, on her next attempt, boom, the whole thing came tumbling down, which was fun and also a great way to start a conversation. I told her what I was doing and why, and I asked how she felt about our democracy, and she said, "Yeah, it's in trouble." And so I asked, any particular issues that were of concern to her. And she said, this kind of surprised me, because when I think about democracy, I think about the bigger picture. But, she's half Mexican. Her husband is black. Kids are mixed race. And she said, "Yeah, racism is what concerns me." I get that. I totally get that. And they love living in a small town, Iowa. It's been an overall very good experience, but there are incidents of racism which are very troubling. And she told me a story, and this happened back in 2017, so 8 years ago. There were 5 Creston High School students, and this actually made national news. So maybe some of you remember it or have heard of it. But there were 5 students who posted a photo of themselves wearing Ku Klux Klan hoods while burning a cross and holding a Confederate flag. Now, we have to bear in mind that people's brains aren't fully formed until age 25. But still, that was really, really bad. And they were all members of the football team. And they were supposed to be playing Harlan that weekend. And they were immediately removed from the team. I assume Harlan won. Anyway, the school's athletic director, and I got a quote here from him. He said, quote, "This picture does not represent the beliefs of our school system, our parents, or our community." Good response, right? So the parents of one of the students wrote a letter to the local paper apologizing for their son's actions, and they said they supported the school's disciplinary decisions. Good community response. The gal was telling me the story. The gal who I played Jenga with, she told me that, you know, later there were some Creston residents who weren't happy with the school's action, and they decided to print T-shirts supporting the students based on their freedom of speech. And, you know, you could have a long conversation about whether that level of freedom of speech is okay or whether it's hateful and deserves some, you know, some reprimand. At any rate, for the most part, it seemed like people supported the school's decision to remove them from the football team. The woman I'm talking with, she says that, I said, so how would that, you know, I just kind of wondering how that would have been handled today. And her thought was, Trump has so turned up the rhetoric on racial stuff, hurtful stuff, hateful stuff, that Creston residents are now feeling empowered to, you know, express their own racist comments and to take actions that, you know, years ago would not have been accepted, would have been condemned, would have resulted in some disciplinary action. And there's kind of a related incident happening in Creston right now, which has also made, if not national news, at least statewide news. And that involves a teacher by the name of, I believe, Melissa Crooks. I believe she's an English teacher. And she, after the shooting of Charlie Kirk, she posted something about how she made it clear it was unacceptable and wrong that anybody should be shot and killed. But she did appreciate that she would no longer have to hear his voice in the public space. And that got a huge pushback from the administration, who actually suspended her. Now there's a court case. And, you know, I do not think it's appropriate to praise anybody for shooting anybody or to encourage anything like that. I don't like what the teacher in Oskaloosa said, one Nazi down. That, to me, is an incitement to further violence. What Kirk said is much milder, and then on top of that, she apologized pretty extensively. And to make it even more interesting, the superintendent of the schools in Creston has, again, felt at liberty to exercise his First Amendment rights with some pretty awful stuff on Facebook and elsewhere. And I guess he's not the only one within the school district who is saying some pretty hardcore right-wing stuff that is pretty hurtful and pretty hateful. So I kind of get where people are coming from who are upset about the continued prevalence of racism and, in fact, the accelerated occurrence of racially motivated statements and incidents. And again, this is Melissa, to be clear, Melissa Crooks is white. But the bottom line is a lot of the stuff being said online by people on the political right is arguably much more hurtful and hateful than what she said in response to Charlie Kirk's killing, again, which she apologized for. So I think that's where my Jenga friend is coming from, is, we've now got a president who speaks with any lack of control at all about his feelings on making immigration, more opportunities for white people to immigrate to the U.S. You remember the situation with South African, whites who owned a lot of land in South Africa and felt endangered by the black majority. I mean, it's so clear that Trump favors white people. And it's also undeniable that he has close to himself in his administration, and in his think tanks, people who envision a white nationalist, probably a white Christian nationalist country. And so when you've got that kind of model coming from the White House, yeah, it's not hard to imagine that that these kind of incidences are going to play out very differently than they might have 8 years ago. Again, 8 years ago, as bad as it was, and again, kids do dumb things. I can speak from my own personal experience, nothing that bad. But still, the response of the community, of the superintendent or the athletic director, and of the one of the parents of the kids. You might not see that same response today. I mean, especially from the current superintendent in the Creston School District. He seems very eager to punish Melissa Crooks and very uninhibited about his own eagerness to express his you know, very questionable viewpoints in the public forum of Facebook and elsewhere in social media. And, you know, I understand, too, the conversation. It's a tricky one because, you know, the argument is that Facebook is my private, you know, that's my private page. I'm just saying that to my friends. Well, you know, unless your settings are a certain way, that stuff is out there for the whole world. Facebook and social media have kind of become the town square. You know, you used to, my dad tells me when he was a kid, he would go down to Poe Park in the Bronx where the Irish immigrant community lived, and people would get up on literally on a soapbox. So they had a little bit of height on the crowd, and then they would talk. And they would air their public opinions. And if somebody didn't like that, they would, you know, come out and offer a different opinion. Maybe sometimes that led to violence. I don't know, but that was the public square. The public square is now places like Facebook and TikTok and Blue Sky. Those are the venues where people express their public opinions. And so if you want, you know, if you want to say a private thing, say it privately. But that's not a private place anymore. And if you are the superintendent of schools or a teacher or someone in a very, you know, powerful position within our community, especially if you have influence over very impressionable young minds, you have a responsibility to use that public forum, you know, with some integrity and with some restraint. So, if a parent, you know, how many times have you heard it said, well, that kid's troublesome or that kid's this way because of bad parental influence? And if bad parental influence is a problem, how much more so is bad presidential influence? Somebody that we, in theory, are all supposed to stand up to and respect. But when you have a president who behaves like our current president is behaving, again, I had a guy in this program a couple years ago, a Trump voter, who said, I like Trump, but I wish he didn't have thumbs, meaning he wishes he wouldn't be tweeting and doing other things on social media. Meaning really that he wishes he wouldn't be saying the things he's saying. Anyway, that was a great way to end week two. Week three started off with a walk from Creston to Afton. And Afton, town of about 800. I mean, twice the size as the town of Orient that I'd stayed in last week. The my host there was Jerry Busenberg, and he... back in the 80s, Jerry had bought several buildings in Afton. And these buildings were, you got them for a song because they were just going to, the owners were just letting them go to taxes. The roofs were all bad. And he utilized something that I became very familiar with and supportive of as a state legislator, the Main Street program. And I know that there's an expression like, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. And that's always a cause to want to run away. But if they say, hey, I'm from the Main Street program and I'm here to help, that's actually a good thing. That's an example of government at its best. And the Main Street program, again, its emphasis is on saving downtowns, old buildings, streetscapes, taking your core, which perhaps at one point in history used to be thriving, and regenerating it, reviving it so that it is, again, a place where people can make a living. And Jerry's done an amazing job. I think there were eight buildings that he purchased. Four of them, one of them was a bank. One used to be a Rexall Pharmacy. Anybody remember Rexall Pharmacies? One was an Oddfellows Hall. And he's got his jewelry shop in one of those buildings. And one next door that he owns was a bar. And now it's an abandoned building. But on the night I was there, it became... a great venue for a spontaneous jam session. Four musicians showed up to join me, and we had a great time. We played all kinds of stuff. There was a guitar that I could play. There was an accordion. How many places have an accordion sitting around? Anyway, they had an accordion, and we had a great time. Now, the upstairs of that building, Jerry's vision is to turn that into a dance hall, which would be very cool. But again, you know, you see all these places around Iowa that, and across the Midwest, and probably across the U.S., that where these beautiful downtown Main Street areas are just crumbling. I remember years ago, I came and spoke to the city council at the town of Lorimer, also in same county, in Union County. And I just argued how important it would be for them to try to save the buildings that had they'd put on the demolition list, and they didn't get it. They tore them down. And I think more and more we're seeing that, you know, adaptive reuse of these buildings can be a great economic boon for the city, a great source of community pride, and also beef up your economic vitality. So from Afton, I walked to Murray, and that was a hard 18 miles on gravel. And for those of you who are under the delusion that Iowa is flat, let me tell you, you should have joined me for that day. Afton to Murray, 18 miles, hills, one after another. I was so, and on top of that, I had to hustle because I had a meeting in Murray. I was exhausted. It was the hardest day of the march. and again, it was supposed to be less, just under 17 miles, but I made it longer by, I started early. I ended up, had a different starting point, long story. But I started early before sunrise. And I walked about a half mile when I realized, wait a minute, why is the sun rising in the west today? And of course, the concluding remark there is, I'm a dumb guy. The sun is not rising in the west. I'm walking the wrong direction. So I turn around. That adds a whole other mile to my day. And it was tiring. But I remember one guy I met, easy to remember, name is Ed. He wasn't too interested in talking politics, but we did talk a little bit about soybeans. And like every farmer I've talked to, they're not happy with what's happening with soybeans right now. He did not know about the $20 billion bailout that Trump wants to give to Argentina. And I also told him, well, you know, that bailout could increase to $40 billion because Trump is hinging it upon his buddy in Argentina getting reelected, which, I mean, this is a really weird new kind of extortion. And the other downside to this, other than it just being really, really bad policy, is that it's allowing Argentina to sell soybeans to China for cheap. And this is one reason China has bought zero soybeans from the U.S. this year. He did say that, you know, he hadn't known that, but he was glad to hear that. Of course, it just made him more concerned. But he said, you know, even though, you know, the soybean market is dead right now, and corn is what, under 370 a bushel? That's pretty low. You got to hit what, $5 a bushel, I think, to break even on corn. He also said, you know, at least the cattle market is doing pretty good. And we talked a little bit about cattle, and his asked him what kind of breeds he was raising, because I guessed two out of the three of them, but some of them he wasn't sure what breeds they were, because he just goes to the sale barn, he finds the cattle, he finds the cow that he just, it looks good to him, doesn't care the breed, buys it. And that kind of reminds me of the cattle industry back in Ireland, when each of our farms were 30 acres and we would go to the market and buy one, two, or three cows. And we didn't care what species, what breed they were. If they were a good-looking cow, that's what we wanted. Anyway, the most interesting thing in that conversation with this guy was that he pointed out, you know, we were on a little bit of a hill, and his house was the only one in view. But he pointed out, you know, there used to be a house right there across the street, one just down there. There was one over there. I think he pointed to four different places where there used to be houses. So again, this is part of the problem in our rural communities. The main street's falling down, and then the abandonment of farms in the rural area. This is a much more detailed conversation and a much more challenging problem to tackle, and we got to do it. But right now, I got to take a break. And when we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about some of the people I've met on my trip this week, and also share a couple interviews with you. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here. And thanks to our sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. Well, I'm going to start this segment off with a rather pessimistic interview. I mean, it's not hard to imagine or understand why some people might feel pretty pessimistic about the way things are going. Here's my talk with Bruce Harris. Hey, talking with Bruce Harris here. He retired, I believe?
Retired.
Dentist in Osceola, Iowa?
8 years ago.
Yeah. And a keen observer of all matters political. What do you think of our current situation, Bruce?
I don't feel very good about it. I really feel like the Republican Party, it's not just Trump. He might be the spearhead, but I think people have, they believe him. And they believe Pam Bondi, they believe Joni Ernst, they believe Kim Reynolds. And I don't see him changing, and they've made an investment in believing in the Republican Party.
Do you think most people have? I mean, do you think any people are starting to have second thoughts about the Trump administration now that they see the tariffs and the National Guard going to U.S. cities, the boats being blown up in the Caribbean? Do you think those are causing any pause for people who might have supported Trump?
I think that you might get a few people that are changing, but I don't see it happening. Even the farmers that are having trouble selling their soybeans, I'm not seeing a big change. People just seem to be loyal to him. And if you think back, you know, he did that interview where he came out saying you can grab him by the... And then he had one thing after another. He's had the case with the documents. He got impeached twice. And... it seems to me the Republican Party is like, well, that's the other side. That's just them going after Trump. They actually buy into that. I know really smart people, and they think January 6th, they think that was okay. If you watch people going in your Capitol and tearing it apart, and that doesn't change their mind. Now, there have been a few that changed, but I think they changed and didn't vote for him. But he won the election by people that... with all of that stuff that happened, I don't have a lot of hope that this country is going to come back together.
Is there a solution, or are you pretty much beyond? Think it's beyond salvation.
I don't know that it. I don't know about that. If Trump goes, then you're going to have a lot of infighting in there. I don't see anybody having the influence that Trump has. I don't know how he's done it, but he's obviously brought people together that, you know, he's got Grassley cowed, Grassley backed down from him. None of our representatives here will stand up to him. Joni Ernst isn't running again. Kim Reynolds isn't running again. Those guys are all afraid of him. He's got some tremendous power. And maybe if he's gone, maybe there'll be enough infighting that the people will destroy each one another. You know, the Cruises and who's the guy out of Florida?
DeSantis.
Yeah, DeSantis and Rubio, you know, all of those guys are power hungry, but I don't think they can bring people together like Trump has.
So you've been in Osceola a long time. How many years?
I was in Osceola since 1977.
1977. And you were practicing dentist for how long?
40 years.
40 years. What changes have you seen in the town, in the county that might account for some of the... political
changes that are happening today?
When I came to town, I was a Democrat, and the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, we would have our offices, and during elections, you'd go over to the courthouse, and you'd be there watching the numbers go up, and you'd be with the people from the other party, and it was fine. Lots of great friends that were Republicans, and something happened where it's gotten, being a Democrat, you're a liberal, I mean, it's changed where it's kind of scary sometimes. You know, I putting a sign up in your yard, it takes a lot of courage anymore.
Have you noticed changes within the Republicans you've known throughout your life?
Oh, man. Yeah, I've lost friends. I have friend people that, you know, yeah, they've gotten, they're the ones that really get, they hated Obama, that birth certificate. They just feel like Trump has been mistreated. The Democrats are unfair. Maybe they felt under Obama the way I feel under Trump. Hopeless. Get up every day. You just don't feel, oh man, there's a cloud hanging over you.
Well, I sure hope that there's a way out of this. You don't quite see it though, do you?
I don't see us coming back together again. And this is a pretty big split. This is, this has happened in the past where we've come back together. But I don't know. I hope we do, but I don't see big changes. And you start looking at, oh, yeah, we'll win the electoral map. I don't know, man. There's gerrymandering going on. Look at how the last election went. Who saw those states going for Trump? I'm scared.
Well, I'm sorry, and I thank you for taking the time to talk. And it was a blast playing music with you tonight.
It was fun. What a great accordion.
I'm not sure about great. I don't know if the word great has ever been used in the same sentence as accordion.
You should come to Southern Iowa. You'll really appreciate it.
Thank you so much,
We love
much,
an
Bruce.
Accordion player.
Folks, talking with Bruce Harris, Osceola, Iowa.
Well, yeah, that was not very uplifting, but I appreciated that it was very honest. And let's stick with not uplifting for a bit here. So as I arrived in Osceola, I stopped at a Pilot truck stop, and lots of truckers there. And met a guy who said, I heard him say something in Spanish, so I greeted him in Spanish. We spoke for a little bit in Spanish, and then when he realized my English was... His English was a lot better than my Spanish. We switched and introduced himself. He's a truck driver. He's from Miami. And he saw my shirt, Save America March. He said, yeah, that's good. We like to save it. We got to save America. And that's what Donald Trump is doing. I said, well, I don't see it that way. I think Donald Trump is going to destroy our country. He's taking away our democracy. And the guy was adamantly opposed to that viewpoint. He was from Cuba originally. Been a truck driver in the U.S. for, I think, 25 years. And we tried talking. It did not go well. I mean, there was no... He said... I said, well, how do you feel about him deporting so many people who aren't criminals? He said he was going to deport the criminals, but most of the people have no criminal record. He says, oh, you know, they do. They all have criminal records. I says, well, I mean, they don't. We have you know, reliable... data that shows that they don't. He goes, no, that's fake news. I said, okay, well, I'll do. And I held up my phone and I searched for criminal records of those being deported in the U.S. And up pops an AI search. And again, I have my criticism of AI, but sometimes, I mean, my experience, AI information is usually pretty accurate, even if I dislike AI for other reasons. And I said, yeah, it says here, like, I think it was 63% have no criminal record, and it was about two thirds that have no criminal record, and I think 93% have not done any violent crime at all. Only 7%, in other words, have done anything considered violent. And he said, well, "I don't believe that." Well, I said, "It's right here. Here are the numbers. This is based on data anybody can look at. No, it's fake news." Okay. And then he started showing me photos and videos allegedly from Cuba, showing vast piles of garbage in the street of Havana, showing a young woman who was emaciated, I mean, horribly emaciated because she was starving to death, and then somebody coming along and feeding her a bowl of rice. Showed me a little video of a man foraging through garbage cans for food. He said, see, this is what it's like in Cuba. This is what it's like under communism. And we were becoming communists, and Trump has saved us from communism. I said, well, I don't know about those videos. They may be AI generated. You know, they may not be accurate. I don't know. But I do know that the data shows pretty clearly that he's not doing what he said he would do when it comes to deporting people with criminal records. And so, you know, we had one other angle we pursued. I talked about how do you feel about Trump, you know, blowing up boats in the Caribbean. He says, well, those are narco-terrorists. Well, I says, how do you know they're narco-terrorists? There's no evidence. The evidence has been destroyed. The people have been killed instead of boarding the vessels. I tried to say, why couldn't they board the vessels? He says, well, we know. Well, how do you know? He died. And there was no talking with him. And I will say, this is the first person I've met on this march in 3 weeks that I could really not talk with. There was no room for conversation because he was not interested in facts. He had his preconceived notion of the world, and he was going to stick with that. And anything that happened was going to be conformed to that. His perspective was already solid. And, you know, I guess I'm happy to report that's the first person I've met who was impossible to talk with. And I'm also, I guess, a little relieved that he's not from Iowa. He's from Miami. But, one other interview I want to share with you Donna Johnson. We're going to take this conversation back into a more positive direction, and here we go.
I'm here with Donna Johnson. She's a resident of Murray, which is one of the towns in South Central Iowa that are on my route this week. Donna, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you.
So, you know, we've had a good chat over dinner, but more detail. The a lot of concern right now about the direction our country's heading, and some sense that, I mean, my experience is more and more people are starting to have concerns. And that's not what I'm hearing from everybody. What are your thoughts on whether people are starting to think that maybe this administration is going too far?
Oh, boy. I want to have hope. I want to think that people are starting to see that the trampling of personal rights, the trampling on the Constitution, I want to believe that people are seeing this and changing their mind. I think some are. It's a really hard time to be a U.S. citizen and to care.
And Murray is a town, a small town, but predominantly Republican, independent, but kind of mixed. Where am I off on this?
No, you're right. It's probably predominantly Republican. It didn't used to be. Used to be predominantly Democrat, and really within the last 6 or 7 years, that has changed.
What changed it?
I don't know. I assume people were taken in by Trump. I assume they thought he was a businessman, and they were getting all their information from right-wing news sources, and they didn't do any of their own research.
And there are still people who are just totally behind Trump, regardless of any of the concerns that they might have, correct?
I would assume, but they aren't in my circle. I don't run into that. And if I do, they do not bring it up.
Are you hearing from people who are, maybe they did support Trump and now they're having reservations?
Yeah, we have a farmer friend that's finally kind of seeing the light because he's not going to be able to sell his beans. He's not going to get back what he put in, you know.
So he's got concerns about the tariffs and
right.
Maybe about the bailout to Argentina.
Right, yeah, he's starting to see it. He was a hardcore right-wing person. He was a trucker for a lot of years, and he listened to Rush Limbaugh, and he just kind of got ruined. But, yeah, talk radio was not good for him. But yeah, he's starting.
He should have been listening to the Fallon Forum.
He should have. He should have. Yeah.
But beyond that concern, the bigger concern about this slide into authoritarianism, I mean, I'm thinking that there are people, I mean, what I'm hearing from people who are concerned about the soybean issue for sure, but also I talked to a guy the other day who was not at all happy, again, a conservative, you know, rural farmer guy who was not happy about sending the National Guard to U.S. cities. And I'm guessing that some of the folks who voted for Trump who were on his side because of their perception that he was a non-interventionist can't be real happy about blowing up, what now, 7 vessels off the coast in the Caribbean?
That is just horrific. I don't have the words for how awful that is. We don't have any proof those people were drug dealers. They didn't...
We blew up the proof.
Yeah, they didn't board the boats. They didn't confiscate anything. They just saw people and killed them. So basically, we're a third world attack nation. It's terrible that they did that. Yeah. And it's terrible that this ICE business is going into people's homes. They get the wrong address. They get the wrong people. They go in. They take their stuff. They boot the people out in the night. My God. Is everybody just sure that won't be them next?
Yeah, good question. And do you think... My perception is that there are some people who all they hear about is the Newsmax WHO radio perspective on immigration, that the border is now secure. They don't hear about these horrible things happening to U.S. citizens, to children, to other people, where ICE is going way overboard in terms of how it's responding.
Yeah, it's an ugly, ugly time. Oh my gosh.
And I would say it's up to us to begin to bring those scenarios to people's attention. Say, hey, this has happened. Did you know about this?
You're right. It's hard. It's hard to have those conversations. It takes energy and effort and brain work, but we just don't have the luxury of sitting back and thinking people are going to get this without some intervention on our part.
So can you think of 10 people in Murray that you're going to go talk to now about this?
Can't promise that. I already talked to people that are already feel the way I do. It would be difficult to go search out the people that would be a tough one.
The people who think differently.
Yeah, the people who think that this is okay.
Well, that's kind of my specialty.
I'm glad somebody's good at it.
Well, we need more people doing it, I think.
I
think when people see hardcore, incontrovertible proof about some of the things that are happening, they can't help but reconsider their position, because I think would you agree with this, Donna, that most Iowans are good people?
I used to think that. There's still, even the people that are hardcore Republicans, hardcore MAGA, if I was stuck on the side of the road, they'd stop and help me. But apparently they'd throw me under the bus if I was 16 and wanted an abortion. You know, I mean, we just cannot seem to... Can't seem to come together on a lot that's important.
Well, let's keep working on it.
All righty.
Folks, we're talking with Donna Johnson here in Murray, Iowa.
And this is Ed Fallon on the Fallon Forum, back with you after a short break.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Western Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Hey, it's Ed Fallon, folks, welcoming you back to the conversation on the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, I'm going to continue with some of the interviews from week three of the Save America March. I'm talking with Joe Hynek here in Murray, Iowa. Joe is a unique person in many ways. He owns and operates a radio station, KSOI. Joe, just in a nutshell, what's it been like, getting that up and running and operating it?
It was a big job. Took a lot of time. I spent about 7 years going from applying for the license to broadcast to being on the air. And then we've been on the air for about, I think, around 12 or 13 years now.
And you're making tons of money.
We're a nonprofit. Our license we broadcast under is a non-commercial educational station license. And so we don't have the luxury of selling ads that say subjective things. We just have to tell the facts.
Any opinion about the way the FCC manages community-owned stations versus commercial stations?
Well, I think I don't have a strong opinion of any sort. I think I'm really glad that the non-commercial station option is there, that it cuts the cost to run it, and it gives little communities like Murray and Southern Iowa a way to run a station that reaches our population that's really spread out.
And your population in Murray itself is 600 people, but your station signal reaches, I think, what, 12 counties?
12 counties with a decent signal, yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so on the 2010 census count, our 54 dB, a little bit farther than that, reaches about 110,000 people. We figure about, if we're lucky, 2-3% of those are listening at any time for 5 minutes or so during a day. So,
what kind of advertising clients do you attract?
The ones who are making money. So
no soybean farmers.
Not this year. We have a lot of community services. So we have several hospitals. We have a nursing home. And every now and then we get a more for-profit business, like a car dealership. Those are our big sponsors.
Now, every once in a while, there's an election and candidates are spending all kinds of money. Do you take those kind of ads?
No. So we have zero employees running our station. I think for a Class C station, we're 19 kilowatts. That's very unusual that nobody is at the station. So it's all volunteer. Everybody does everything for free. And one thing that we cut out was doing anything with politics, because it would take management of some more paperwork, and that really kills it.
And you might probably, I guess, that if you have a political opinion being expressed on a station like this, there's bound to be some pushback from somebody.
Yeah, I mean, in any community, there would be some pushback, and it's really worked to our advantage to not be political in these really bipartisan times. So we're really focused on what happens in Southern Iowa and try to make sure that everyone that talks on the station is the content is derived from Southern Iowans or someone who had a connection. And the only thing that's not is the music. So we just don't have enough musical Southern Iowans to cover 24/7 of content.
Well, I heard your son play saxophone. Maybe there's a future there for some
Maybe. So maybe. I mean, you could just drive to Murray and park outside. You'd hear it coming out of our windows.
There was some pretty fun music last night in Afton, too. But I guess, yeah, it's still not enough to fill a 24/7 station.
No. But, you know, we do take solicitations from Southern Iowa musicians. So if you want to send in your music to KSOI, we'd be glad to play it. You know, it does have to kind of fall in our genre, which is very wide, but, you know, like if it's acid metal, that it may not make the cut for the daytime program.
Yeah, well, I'll try to cut back on my acid metal content.
You're in the safe zone,
Ed. All right, hey, thanks. Talking to Joe Hynek here in Murray, Iowa, in Clark County in Southern Iowa. I'm talking with John Sullivan here in Osceola in the town square under major construction. John, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
What's your background? What do you do?
I am a software engineer in the healthcare sphere. So I actually work for a company whose home office is based in San Francisco, California. But opportunities for employment that I do are very limited here. So I have a very esoteric job. So I'm happy that I can work remotely. Otherwise, I'd have not as great a prospects as, yeah.
And you're running for school board.
Oh, that's correct. Yes, I was appointed 3 months ago after an individual left as a result of just moving out of county. So I've taken on that, and it's been a lot of learning. I'm still in my infantile stage of learning the office, but I'm enjoying it so far. It feels great to be able to give back to my community.
And what are your thoughts on whether there is discontent here in Clark County with the direction of the current presidential administration?
That's a tough question. I think there's a lot of disillusionment. I think people were expecting things to improve in certain ways, especially economically, and we're seeing the exact opposite right now. So I think people are upset, but I don't think that they know exactly how or where to put that degree of frustration. So it's being outputted in unusual ways.
So I know that there's plenty of concerns I've heard about the what's happening with soybeans. Nothing right now. No soybeans being sold to China. Normally, China will buy half the crop of soybeans that mm-hmm. we produce. But are there other sectors of the economy where you're seeing some pushback against Trump's economic policies?
Oh, boy. In terms of retail, local retail, people are definitely hurting. Everything is getting more expensive now. So just the little things that they didn't used to have to worry about, like shipping and receiving products from overseas, now with tariffs are making that very, very challenging. In fact, some of our local businesses on the square here are in severe jeopardy of not being here, not that in the near future.
And are those businesses connecting some of their challenges with what's happening in Washington, D.C.?
I think you're hearing that. But again, like I said, there's just that degree of disillusionment that some folks are saying, well, just things get more expensive. But it's not. Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was one of the campaign promises, was that egg prices would come down, that the economy would be the best ever, and maybe people are seeing that's not the case.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring up egg prices. People in smaller communities tend to rely on each other, especially the more rural you get. For example, I get my eggs from one of my brothers in a Masonic lodge for $2 a piece, or $2 a dozen. So, yeah, it's just, it's nice to have that kind of support and help.
I presume they have their own feed.
Yes.
Because we break even with when our eggs are $5 a dozen, we break even at that price.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, John, hey, great talking with you. Thank you for joining me, and good luck with your efforts to work with the school board.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Back after a short break with more conversation on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners and sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. Contact DavidDrakeFamilyPsychiatry.com. All right, so one last interview I want to share with you. I'm in Clark County, county seat of Osceola, here talking with Vielka Rivera Wumbold. She is the chair of the Clark County Democrats and pretty active beyond that even. Vielka, welcome to my conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we had a nice gathering here. About, what, 12 or so people showed up? So part of the conversation was, you know, my feeling is that we have to be careful not to be dismissive of people who vote differently than us. It doesn't help. For an example I use, it doesn't help to yell at a Republican voter, you're a racist, you're a misogynist, or you're a stupid. I think that's counterproductive. Would you? And I know you're Latino. You've got maybe a different perspective than some of us might have on this.
Yes, I think sometimes it just needs to be called out. While I may not agree that yelling, you know, and calling people out in a group setting might not be my cup of tea, I'm not going to condemn somebody else who does, because I see where what she or he are projecting to. And so if the shoe fits.
But most of the angry, you're a racist, leftist, I see, tend to be white people.
Yes.
I don't see minority voices being quite so strident or offensive.
No, it's, I can't explain that all the way. I can only speak for myself, and I'll say that it is important, just like it is important to have people of the non-minority status to call things out. You know, I think that's where I'm at, is that's where it is. It's important to have the people who are non-minority either call things out and to be those allies and not be shy about it. We know, we see it, and we can talk about it, but it's going to lead to more conflict.
But isn't it counterproductive to, once you call somebody a racist, that conversation's over. You're never going to be able to talk with them at all, right?
It's not over for me that they voted for somebody who is pushing the mass deportations and the incarceration of mothers and children, for example, or exploding boats down in South America.
So it
doesn't, you know, I can't answer that as far as, you know, hard for me to explain it, but is it counterproductive? It's counterproductive in the human nature to be yelling at anybody, and anybody will shut down. If they call me names, I'm going to shut down as equally. But in this case, I just say, wear it.
Okay, but again, the bottom line for me is it's counterproductive.
For conversation.
If our goal is to try to win people over, let's start with a more congenial approach, right?
I don't think it's on me to do the congenial approach. It's not. I'm the one who's being targeted. I'm the one who's me and mine are being targeted. Us groups that are being targeted, I don't think need to come 50% of the way or anything. I think it's the other way around.
So do you find that there's receptivity to your views in Clark County, again, which tends to be a red county?
but and also probably heavily heavily white county, but do you find that your perspective has, you know, has some resonance with people?
I would never dare to speak for Clark County because I'm new here. I'm relatively new here to Clark County, new resident and stuff. My experience has been pleasantly surprised of the support I have had. But then again, I'm not going around, they know I'm not going to go around yelling at people and things of that nature. But when it comes up in conversation like it has now, yeah, I'm going to stick my ground and stand my ground. And I find that most people are trying very hard to understand that and be supportive of that.
I had two conversations with Latino people today mm-hmm. here in Clark County, you, and then at a truck stop, a Cuban man from Miami, a truck driver, he's not from here. He happened to be coming through. He was stopped at the pilot station to take a shower and wait to load up his rig. He was about as rabid mm-hmm. pro everything MAGA as one can possibly be. And even when I presented him with some facts, he just dismissed them as fake news, even though they were like from AI generated responses. I guess in his case, I don't see how there's a conversation to be had there.
No, and there isn't. You know, having been living in Florida before and having that experience, it's very hard to come across those folks. However, I can tell you that if I were to sit down, he sits down in conversation with another Latino and he came up with that, we could have a different kind of conversation. And I don't know how to explain that very well, but there are things that I would be able to bring up to him and a manner of speaking to him that he may not like it, but he would understand that I'm coming from the same place as he. And so we would probably reach more of a, well, you're not from Cuba understanding, so you don't know what you're talking about. And I would have to, whether agree with him or not, but understand why he's saying that. I'm not saying that it changes mine, because if I had found that trick, Miami vote would have never changed.
Well, hey, I thank you for joining the conversation. I've been talking with Vielka Rivera Womble.
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much for having me and coming to Clark County. We're very proud of what we do here, and we're trying our best to do our part, like yourself, to save America.
Well, that's kind of wrapping up week three, and an interesting week, as the entire experience has been interesting. And again, not always positive. I mean, people have some pretty, depressing perspectives to share, and I guess that's understandable. And where we go from here, in addition to the depressing perspectives, there's a lot of real positive stuff coming out here. And I see a real opportunity for change. And I think we get there by engaging in civil dialogue. I'm going to stick with that. Hey, thanks again to those who took time with me this past week to discuss the Save America March, to meet those who got interviewed. Thanks also to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And thanks to the Des Moines Iver Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.